Welcome to Learning English on the Voice of America. I'm Katie Weaver in Washington. Today on the program, Ashley Thompson and I take you to Biscayne National Park in the southern coastal state of Florida. We also hear another classic American story. But first, we have some election-related news. We go to Dory Gundy with a report on presidential character.
In the final days of the presidential campaign, candidates Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump are talking more about each other's character than political issues. The Federal Bureau of Investigation again is investigating Clinton's use of a private email server while she was Secretary of State. This has some, including Trump, questioning her morals.
A vote for Hillary is a vote to surrender our government to public corruption that threatens the survival of our Constitution.
At a Clinton for President rally, Clinton spoke to the crowd, questioning the morality of Trump's behavior.
Donald Trump is out there stoking fear. Disgracing our democracy and insulting one group of Americans after another.
Hillary is the one who broke the law.
Presidential campaigns are normally about issues like the economy, the military, and foreign policy. But not this one, says expert Matt Dalek.
This race has primarily become about character and about personality. I think this issue of character is going to remain front and center. I don't think it's going away. And I think to an unusual degree, issues and policies are not really as central as they typically are.
Voters question if they can trust Hillary Clinton. Others fear that Trump is not reasonable enough to be president. The concerns voters have about both candidates have made this election different from other presidential elections, says political scientist Patrick Hickey.
This is a very odd American presidential election in that both candidates are viewed unfavorably by the majority of the American people. You know, usually that might happen to one candidate, but not both.
The candidates have made each other's character a big part of their message to voters.
You look at the violence.
In the second presidential debate, Trump talked about Clinton's character.
We have an increase in murder within our cities, the biggest in 45 years. We have a divided nation because people like her, and believe me, she has tremendous hate in her heart. She's got tremendous hatred.
Because they were not attractive enough for
I did not say that.
In the third debate, Clinton spoke of Trump's past comments about women.
Donald thinks belittling women makes him bigger. He goes after their dignity, their self-worth, and I don't think there is a woman anywhere who doesn't know what that feels like.
The winner of this election will be the one who can persuade the most supporters to go out and vote, says Patrick Hickey.
This is definitely a kind of anti-election as opposed to a pro-election, which I think means on election day, turnout is really going to be what matters, which side can turn out voters to actually get to the polls.
One of the longest and most divided U.S. election campaigns in recent history will come to an end on Tuesday night. For many Americans, it can't come soon enough. I'm Dorothy Gundy.
Americans often identify the two major political parties by the colors red and blue. The practice began with the 2000 election. Media organizations liked the idea because it made easy use of voting maps. It helped show the winner of each state as the results came in. The Democratic Party is blue. The Republican Party is red. For the last 16 years, there has been a lot of talk about red states and blue states. Since elections take place in autumn, red and blue have become fall colors. But this time of year, people on social media sites like Facebook and Twitter are also talking about true fall colors, like those found in nature. The colors are orange, yellow, red, and brown. Why? Huge numbers of trees change color in the late fall in the U.S. Their leaves go from green to shades of orange, red, brown, and yellow. A chemical called chlorophyll is responsible. Chlorophyll helps trees make sugar from sunlight. This feeds the tree and keeps the leaves green. But as sunlight decreases in the fall, the trees produce less chlorophyll. This is when the leaves show what some people call their true colors. The website SmokyMountains.com has a fall foliage map. It predicts when people will see the best fall colors. The best time to see the colorful leaves, also known as foliage, was in mid-October, but some areas in the U.S. still have colorful trees. Twitter user Chris Duncan shared a photo he took earlier this week in Washington, D.C. It shows a bright red tree and the Lincoln Memorial and Washington Monument. One person shared a photo taken high above the Virginia Tech campus, a university in Southwest Virginia. Inga Sarda Sorensen is a photographer in New York City. She posted some stunning photos of Central Park. But you do not have to be in the U.S. to see the color change. Ewan Gunn posted a photo from Scotland showing the Craigellachie Bridge with beautiful green, orange, and yellow leaves in the background. I'm Dan Friedel.
This week, on our national parks journey, we head to southern Florida. Here, you will find blue-green seas, marine wildlife, and islands that hold thousands of years of human history. Welcome to Biscayne National Park. Biscayne is not very far from the lights, noise, and excitement of downtown Miami. But it has a very different atmosphere from the big city. Biscayne National Park was established as a national monument in 1968. It became a national park in 1980. That year, its size also increased. The park now covers more than 70,000 hectares. It includes the northern part of the world-famous Florida Keys. Keys are low-lying islands or reefs.
If you enjoy water, Biscayne is the park for you. 95% of the park is water. Many kinds of animals live within the park. Some of them are threatened or endangered. You will find the huge, gentle West Indian manatee, the less gentle American crocodile, several kinds of sea turtles, and more than 500 species of fish. Four ecosystems come together here, which is what makes the park so diverse. The blending ecosystems create what is called edge communities. These edge communities support a huge array of wildlife. The underwater diversity is what attracts most people to Biscayne National Park.
Human history at Biscayne begins more than 10,000 years ago. Scientists say evidence of the area's earliest people is mostly underwater now, as water levels have risen over time. Within the last 3,000 years, people began to settle in the area. As the population grew, it divided into separate cultures. The groups began making pottery and created trade networks. These Native Americans are called the Tequesta. The Tequesta depended on the rich food source of the sea to survive. They were not centered on farming, which requires huge amounts of time. So the Tequesta had more time than other natives for art and religion. Very complex social structures developed as a result. European explorers began arriving in the area in the early 1500s. They brought with them diseases like smallpox and measles. Over time, these diseases killed huge numbers of Florida's natives. Early explorers arrived in the area on ships. The reefs and rough waters made it difficult for ship captains. Biscayne's waters contain more than 50 shipwrecks. Scuba divers today can explore 6 of them.
Among them is the Earl King, which sank in 1891. It was built in 1865. Earl King was mostly used to transport goods, but it also carried wealthy passengers. In its first few years of service, it was used for trading between China and Australia. The ship hit Long Reef as it sailed to New Orleans from England in 1891. Its machinery and other parts were saved, but Earl King itself sank to the sea floor. Another shipwreck that scuba divers can explore is the Lugano. The British steamship sank in 1913. At the time of its sinking, it was the largest ship ever to wreck in the Florida Keys. It was traveling to Havana, Cuba, carrying goods and more than 100 passengers. Most of them were Spaniards immigrating to Cuba. High winds and heavy seas sent the ship far off course. A collision with Long Reef damaged the ship. Much of the cargo and all of the passengers were safely removed. The captain and crew remained aboard. Many people tried to remove the water from Lugano and repair it. But after several weeks, they abandoned their efforts. Today, the Lugano remains on Long Reef, almost 8 meters below water.
Many visitors to Biscayne National Park choose to explore underwater. Guides lead snorkeling and scuba diving trips. These give visitors the chance to get up close to the park's underwater wildlife as well as its shipwrecks. Visitors can also explore the park on a boat. Canoeing and kayaking are great ways to enjoy Biscayne's mangrove forests. Mangroves are little trees that grow in coastal waters. Many people take a kayak or canoe around the islands and lagoons. At Elliott Key, visitors can set up camp and sleep in the wild. At Boca Chica Key, visitors can explore a lighthouse. The lighthouse has become a symbol of Biscayne National Park. It was built in the 1930s by Mark Honeywell, one of the island's former owners. The deck at the top of the 20-meter-tall lighthouse provides beautiful views of the ocean and the nearby islands. The top of the lighthouse also offers views of Miami Beach's famous skyline. But visitors to Biscayne National Park probably are not there to see skyscrapers and city lights. The beauty in Biscayne is quiet waters, rustling mangroves, and, if you're lucky, a visit with a manatee. And finally, we have an American story from Washington Irving. Here is Doug Johnson narrating The Legend of Sleepy Hollow.
The valley known as Sleepy Hollow hides from the world in the high hills of New York State. There are many stories told about the quiet valley, but the story that people believe most is about a man who rides a horse at night. The story says the man died many years ago during the American Revolutionary War. His head was shot off. Every night he rises from his burial place, jumps on his horse, and rides through the valley looking for his lost head. Near Sleepy Hollow is a village called Tarrytown. It was settled many years ago by people from Holland. The village had a small school and one teacher named Ichabod Crane. Ichabod Crane was a good name for him because he looked like a tall bird, a crane. He was tall and thin like a crane. His shoulders were small, joining two long arms. His head was small, too, and flat on top. He had big ears, large, glassy green eyes, and a long nose. Ichabod did not make much money as a teacher, and although he was tall and thin, he ate like a fat man. To help him pay for his food, he earned extra money teaching young people to sing. Every Sunday after church, Ichabod taught singing. Among the ladies Ichabod taught was one Katrina Van Tassel. She was the only daughter of a rich Dutch farmer. She was a girl in bloom, much like a round, red, rosy apple. Ichabod had a soft and foolish heart for the ladies, and soon found himself interested in Miss Van Tassel. Ichabod's eyes opened wide when he saw the riches of Katrina's farm. Miles of apple trees and wheat fields, and hundreds of fat farm animals. He saw himself as master of the Van Tassel farm, with Katrina as his wife. But there were many problems blocking the road to Katrina's heart. One was a strong young man named Brom Van Brunt. Brom was a hero to all the young ladies. His shoulders were big, his back was wide, and his hair was short and curly. He always won the horse races in Tarrytown and earned many prizes. Brom was never seen without a horse. Sometimes, late at night, Brom and his friends would rush through town shouting loudly from the backs of their horses. Tired old ladies would awaken from their sleep and say, "Why, there goes Brom Van Brunt leading his wild group again." Such was the enemy Ichabod had to defeat for Katrina's heart. Stronger and wiser men would not have tried, but Ichabod had a plan. He could not fight his enemy in the open, so he did it silently and secretly. He made many visits to Katrina's farm and made her think he was helping her to sing better. Time passed, and the town people thought Ichabod was winning. Brom's horse was never seen at Katrina's house on Sunday nights anymore. One day in autumn, Ichabod was asked to come to a big party at the Van Tassel home. He dressed in his best clothes. A farmer loaned him an old horse for the long trip to the party. The house was filled with farmers and their wives, red-faced daughters, and clean, washed sons. The tables were filled with different things to eat. Wine filled many glasses. Brom Van Brunt rode to the party on his fastest horse, called Daredevil. All the young ladies smiled happily when they saw him. Soon music filled the rooms, and everyone began to dance and sing. Ichabod was happy dancing with Katrina as Brom looked at them with a jealous heart. The night passed. The music stopped, and the young people sat together to tell stories about the Revolutionary War. Soon, stories about Sleepy Hollow were told. The most feared story was about the rider looking for his lost head. One farmer told how he raced the headless man on a horse. The farmer ran his horse faster and faster. The horsemen followed over bush and stone until they came to the end of the valley. There, the headless horseman suddenly stopped. Gone were his clothes and his skin. All that was left was a man with white bones shining in the moonlight. The stories ended, and time came to leave the party. Ichabod seemed very happy until he said good night to Katrina. Was she ending their romance? He left feeling very sad. Had Katrina been seeing Ichabod just to make Brom Van Brunt jealous so he would marry her? Well, Ichabod began his long ride home through the hills that surround Tarrytown. He had never felt so lonely in his life. He began to whistle as he came close to the tree where a man had been killed years ago by rebels. He thought he saw something white move in the tree. But no, it was only the moonlight shining and moving on the tree. Then he heard a noise. His body shook. He kicked his horse faster. The old horse tried to run, but almost fell in the river instead. Ichabod hit the horse again. The horse ran fast and then suddenly stopped, almost throwing Ichabod forward to the ground. There, in the dark woods, on the side of the river where the bushes grow low, stood an ugly thing, big and black. It did not move, but seemed ready to jump like a giant monster. Ichabod's hair stood straight up. It was too late to run, and in his fear, he did the only thing he could. His shaking voice broke the silent valley. "Who are you?" The thing did not answer. Ichabod asked again. Still no answer. Ichabod's old horse began to move forward. The black thing began to move along the side of Ichabod's horse in the dark. Ichabod made his horse run faster. The black thing moved with them. Side by side they moved, slowly at first, and not a word was said. Ichabod felt his heart sink. Up a hill they moved above the shadow of the trees. For a moment, the moon shone down, and to Ichabod's horror, he saw it was a horse. And it had a rider. But the rider's head was not on his body. It was in front of the rider, resting on the horse. Ichabod kicked and hit his old horse with all his power. Away they rushed through bushes and trees across the valley of Sleepy Hollow. Up ahead was the old church bridge where the headless horseman stops and returns to his burial place. "If only I can get there first, I am safe," thought Ichabod. He kicked his horse again. The horse jumped onto the bridge and raced over it like the sound of thunder. Ichabod looked back to see if the headless man had stopped. He saw the man pick up his head and throw it with a powerful force. The head hit Ichabod in the face and knocked him off his horse to the dirt below. They found Ichabod's horse the next day peacefully eating grass. They could not find Ichabod. They walked all across the valley. They saw the footmarks of Ichabod's horse as it had raced through the valley. They even found Ichabod's old hat in the dust near the bridge. But they did not find Ichabod. The only other thing they found was lying near Ichabod's hat. It was the broken pieces of a round orange pumpkin. The town people talked about Ichabod for many weeks. They remembered the frightening stories of the valley, and finally they came to believe that the headless horseman had carried Ichabod away. Much later, an old farmer returned from a visit to New York City. He said he was sure he saw Ichabod there. He thought Ichabod silently left Sleepy Hollow because he had lost Katrina. As for Katrina, her mother and father gave her a big wedding when she married Brom Van Brunt. Many people who went to the wedding saw that Brom smiled whenever Ichabod's name was spoken, and they wondered why he laughed out loud when anyone talked about the broken orange pumpkin found lying near Ichabod's old dusty hat.
I'm Katie Weaver. Tune in tomorrow for another Learning English program on the Voice of America.